Sarah Vaughan singing Biding My Time from a new reissue of the George Gershwin songbook. This is Fresh Air. It's 9 minutes after 4 o'clock, and you're tuned to WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Joining us live on Fresh Air is Philadelphia Mayor-elect Wilson Good, who will be interviewed by 91FM's political and City Hall correspondent, Tia O'Brien. In a little while, our phones will be open for your questions for Mayor-elect Good. In the near future, Tia will be back with us on Fresh Air to interview outgoing Mayor Bill Green. Our phone lines will be open again for that interview. Tia?
Thanks very much, and thanks for having us here today, and welcome to you, Wilson Good.
Tia, I'm very glad to be here.
Let me give a little background for those listeners who impossibly wouldn't know a little bit about you. On January 2nd, Wilson Good will be sworn in as our next mayor of Philadelphia. He will make history by becoming the city's first black mayor after winning with one of the largest majorities in recent history. He will succeed Bill Green, who decided a year ago not to run for re-election, shocking many people. Since the primary, since the election in November, Wilson Good has not paused. Instead, he's continued to work to assemble the people who will run the government with him. He's already appointed 6 of the 7 people he'll be placing in the cabinet-level positions, and he's promising to complete appointments to 400 top city positions before he takes office. That's a very ambitious timetable. Your ambitions for running the city of Philadelphia are also challenging, make many people wonder if you can accomplish it all. Let's start off by asking you perhaps to define exactly what you see as your agenda. In recent weeks, in town meetings you've had this week, you've listed a lot of top priorities, from housing, crime, jobs, truancy. It's a wide array, and sometimes I've wondered in listening to you, which one is the number one top priority?
I think that if I could do 4 or 5 things over the next year, I would be satisfied. One would be if I could turn around the jobs situation in Philadelphia. If I could, for example, stop the erosion of jobs and start to bring new jobs here. And if I could, at the end of 1984, simply had a net gain of 1 job, I would be satisfied. After all, we've lost in the neighborhood of 15,000 to 16,000 jobs each year for the past 10 years or so. So I'm very much interested in trying to stop the erosion of jobs. Secondly, I want to clean up our environment. I want to develop a city where the streets are clean, where there is a whole different kind of attitude towards cleanliness. I want to work in cleaning up graffiti on our walls and want to stop young people from marking on walls. So I want to clean up the environment from a point of view of having Philadelphia look better than it used to. The third thing I want to do is to reduce crime. I know that we are the safest of the 10 largest cities in the country, but I want to make sure that people feel safe in coming here and living here and walking around our streets and going to their social clubs and things like that. Fourthly, I want to have a decided improvement in the image of our public education system. First of all, people must have a basic different view of the school system, a positive one. I want to turn the image around. I think that's starting to turn around now. I think Dr. Clayton in the past year has done a lot to turn that system around. And then fifthly, if I could really simply improve the quality of service delivery and of attitudes of employees and courtesy on the part of employees over a period of the next year, I would be satisfied. So I really don't have overly ambitious goals. I think that if I could start to move in the areas of jobs, of education, of crime, and then the physical appearance of our city, I think I would be very well satisfied that we've made some progress in the first year. Of course, I will be dealing with budgets and other kinds of things, with housing. But if I could make some improvement in those areas I've talked about, I would be very, very pleased, very satisfied.
I wanted to ask you about a comment I read in the paper about how you view your relationship with your cabinet members. You've spent a lot of time trying to pick people who you have described as the best minds in the city of Philadelphia to run the government with you. You told a reporter the other day when asked about how you envision your working relationship that Bill Green had what I call a strong cabinet operation, and you said, I will have a strong mayor operation, where the mayor will give a lot of direction to the cabinet, a lot of policy direction, a lot of philosophy to the cabinet, and then have them feed it back to me. You described it as kind of the chairman of the board and the board members. This has been interpreted as Wilson Good, the policymaker, speaking to his board members, who will then really kind of man the controls and run the department based on the policy he sets. Is that a correct description?
Yes, it is. And I think that it is what the people elect a mayor to do. I felt that one of the things that I felt that Bill Green could have done better over the past 4 years was to share with his cabinet, as well as share with the people of the city, his basic goals, his objectives, his philosophy, and basically to outline what he would like to see happen over the next 4 years. I intend to be very clear with my cabinet as to what my priorities are, what things are important. I'm sure all of them will come to their respective jobs with their own agendas, with their own set of priorities, with things they want to see happen. But I want to make it clear now that I intend to have my basic views, my basic approaches, to be the one which we follow in running its government. I think that is what, indeed, the mayor is all about and should be about. I intend to have a strong policy arm in the mayor's office. I don't intend to have all the deputies of the mayors that Mayor Green had, but I intend to have one strong central operation that will be a policy arm of the mayor's office that will help me to be able to give to all of the cabinet people a clear sense of where I want to see them go. Now, that will not be a one-dimensional kind of thing. I want them to feed things back to me, and I will, in fact, involve them in a process of making these decisions and in making these policies. But I also have ideas of my own, which I want to make sure are, in fact, carried out.
When you were managing director for 3 years under Bill Green, one of the comments that was made, one of the few but very consistent criticism was that Wilson Good was a person who failed to delegate responsibility. You wanted it all to be you failed to delegate the kind of nuts and bolts operation, which made it hard for others to do their job. In talking to some people who have been considered for cabinet-level appointments, one thing we've picked up is a hesitation to accept some of these positions, like transportation, because people are afraid that they really won't be able to set their own policy, that it'll be Wilson Good's policy.
Absolutely. I ran for mayor. No one else did. And therefore, I intend to set the policies of the city. I don't think that if you talk to anyone at all who worked for me in a line operation in the government, you will receive anything else but the fact that they were given full authority to operate their respective departments. Now, I want to contrast line operation. If you ask the police commissioner, the fire commissioner, the streets commissioner, they will tell you not one single time that I even question anything in terms of daily operation of the departments. Not one single time, any of those departments. I dealt with policy issues and things like that. They ran those departments. If you're talking about staff people who are my deputies and assistants, yes, but they were there basically to assist me and therefore to carry out things which I gave to them. And there's oft-time a confusion in government as to what a deputy mayor is all about, what a deputy managing director is all about. They're there to assist the top person, and they're really the arms and the legs of that person in office. And therefore, what you may have gotten back in feedback was the fact that I did not permit a deputy to me in the managing director office to be managing director. That's true.
Let me just insert something here. I want to move on to another topic. But just to clarify, some would see what you're suggesting, that you will be the strong initiator of policy as full and just as being the mayor. Others would say you're recruiting the top minds in Philadelphia. Why not give these people really an equal shot at developing policy for the very departments that they have been hired to oversee?
I think that it's one thing to hire managers and to basically have those managers to manage those departments. It's different, I think, that when you run on a platform and says, these are the things I will do as mayor, then people elected you to do those things. And what I want to do is translate my campaign promises into operational performances by the various people I appoint. And the only way I can do that is make it very clear that these are my top priorities, because I promised the people of the city that I would, in fact, do certain things. Now, I will have those things modified, adjusted by people in offices, but I will not go out and let someone else be mayor. Mm-hmm. And decide that, well, I want my policies to be followed through. Those persons did not run for the mayor of a city and did not, in fact, tell the people what they were going to perform. I have to go out there and tell and respond in terms of performance for what I promised I would do.
On November, let's see, it was November 7th, you won.
8th.
November 8th, I should remember that. I was up late enough that night. You won with over 50% of the vote, making an all-time record in 20 years.
55% of the vote, the largest amount of votes received since 1959, when Dick Dilworth ran for re-election.
That was credited to your success in building a coalition between the black community and gaining the support of liberal and moderate whites. On election night, as you were celebrating your election victory, WHYY's Dave Davies was on the phone talking with outgoing Mayor Bill Green, and I wanted you to listen to a couple of comments that Bill Green had about that coalition building. Green raised a few questions about whether or not the coalition you built, you really could keep together.
Well, I don't think it's possible to maintain a coalition of people who have diverse interests. I think that the toughest job that a mayor has is the mayor must say no to interest group after interest group, and Wilson will find himself in precisely the same position that I found myself in, and that is regrettably saying no to some of the interest groups that did in fact support me. Some of the ones that supported him will very quickly be disillusioned.
Right, wrong?
Well, I think he's right. I think that a lot of people support you because they want their own pet project taken care of. Or they want a job from you. Or they want their friend to have a job from you. And what happens after a while that although you say over and over again that I'm going to appoint people based upon merit, that I'm going to be fair and equal to everybody, I'm going to be mayor of all the people, people who support you really don't want you to do all those things. A lot of people really want you to serve their own special interests. And so I think that Bill Green is absolutely correct in saying that after a while that people will start to say, well, he's not taking care of me, and therefore he's not a good mayor. And I expect that there will be within the first 2 or 3 months of my administration erosion of support from certain segment of the community who want me to do certain kinds of things. I won't do those kinds of things.
Like what?
Well, be it appoint someone who's not qualified, be it support a project which is not worthy, be it support someone politically which I don't want to support, be it basically taking a view on something I don't want to take a position on. It could be any number of those things. And I think that what you soon find out is that people who treated you one way in a campaign and said, I like the kinds of things you are indeed saying, will quickly start to say, well, you know, you are right, but you didn't take care of me or you didn't solve my problem.
Which segment of your support do you think is more vulnerable? Most would say Wilson Good's black support. Where do they have to go? Wilson can perhaps not satisfy them as often as the white supporters who really are going to be watching every movement and every appointment. How do you balance the Frank Rizzo supporters and the ADA supporters from the liberal community?
I think that what you do, Tia, you do what you feel is right at all times. And you will win some and lose some.
That's
in
what
terms
Bill Green
of people.
Said.
You will end up making some people happy sometime, and they will cry at other times at things that you do. I'm sure that there are people around from their own vantage point who will have something to say about every appointment I've made, who may not like an appointment because they wanted someone else in that job. But the thing I have to be satisfied with when all is said and done, that I've gone out and kept my promise to the people of the city, looked for the best people I could find, appointed those people based upon merit, and just merely moved to try and have some things done. So I think that it is essential, in my view, that I go out there and try and do the best job I can do. I really don't come to the office of mayor with any notion that I have to stay here forever, stay here for 8 years, or anything like that. I came here to do a good job my way, as long as I can do a good job my way. If people, after 4 years, feel I've not done a proper kind of job the way they want me to do it, so be it. I'm delighted to go on and do something else with my life. I'm here not because I'd started out in my life to be mayor of Philadelphia. That was not what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted really to do something else with my life. So I'm where I am because I feel I can, in fact, do the right kind of job.
Let me just backtrack. Which segment of your support do you see is the most potentially erosive?
I really think that it's very hard to say. It all depends on what decisions I make over the next 4 years.
Do you buy the line that the black community doesn't have anywhere else to go, so you're safe with them?
They have many places to go. You can always go out there and run someone else for office. You can always go out there and pull support towards someone else who's black or who's white. I think that that a notion that any group of people can be taken for granted is nonsense in 1983 and 1984. I receive a large support from the black community, not because I was black necessarily, because if you go back and look at Lucian Blackwell back in 1979 against Bill Green, Bill Green against Lucian Blackwell got half the black vote. People voted for me because they saw over a period of time a consistent record of achievement. Plus, the people that I was running against in the general election did not have the kind of recognition and achievement that Bill Green had. And if you want to take that further and look at the primary election in Baltimore, where a black man named Bill Murphy ran against Donald Schaefer. Schaefer, with a demonstrated record of achievement in that city as a white person, received more than half the black vote in that city at that time. And I think that people in 1983, 1984 will start to judge people more and more by whether or not they feel those persons can solve their basic problems. And I can tell you this, if I don't do a good job in this office as mayor, black support, Hispanic support, white support will all erode at the same time next time around.
Let me just ID who we're talking to if you've just tuned in. This is Wilson Good on Fresh Air. I'm T. O'Brien, WHYY City Hall reporter, and Terry Gross very graciously has lent us the studio for this hour to give us a chance to talk to Wilson Good, who will take office on January 2nd. And in a few minutes, we will be opening up the phone line. The number to call will be 923-2774. We got started a few minutes late, and I am going to ask a couple more questions before we open up the phone lines, but start thinking of your questions. I'd like to ask you one question. I've asked it before, and you've always answered it, well, I'm my own person. But any politician has someone who they've looked at in political life and they've admired. They've taken some cues from them. They've learned a few things from them. Politically, who would you say is the person or the persons who you admire and who has influenced you?
In terms of politics?
Your own style, your own thinking. I mean, let's take an Ed Koch, not to center on him, but he's a very showman-like politician. Is there something to learn from him? And who has influenced you?
I think there are people around who I see in government and in politics who I admire in terms of their style. One of those persons, of course, is Tom Bradley in Los Angeles. I think he has the right kind of style, the right kind of tone, for a major urban area. I think Andy Young, I watched him in the UN, and I watched him as a congressman and watched him as mayor of Atlanta. Is the kind of person that you look at and say, there's a person there who really has a style which I admire. Donald Schaefer from Baltimore, I've watched for a period now of some 7-8 years.
What do you admire in these people?
I admire, first of all, their ability to relate to all people in all neighborhoods. And if you take a Donald Schaefer who's white and in Baltimore, is able to bridge a black and white gap in that city, and take a Tom Bradley in Los Angeles who's able to do the same thing there, Tom Bradley being black. And I think that they both run in cities that have a huge population of people who are of a race opposite than theirs, yet they're able to cut across racial lines because of their ability to go out there and do a job. And that both are very similar in terms of having done major things to move their city very, very strongly ahead, in my view.
You've talked a little bit about a power void in the state Democratic Party in Pennsylvania and a need to fill that void, and also about becoming possibly influential even on the national scene. Why is it important to you to take those steps to fill those leadership gaps as you see them?
Well, I think that when you look at Philadelphia, it is a significant part of the state. And what happens in Pennsylvania always has a direct impact upon Philadelphia. And what I really want to do is to go out there and try and make sure that we have some influence and some control over those persons who are running statewide politics, be it the party politics, be it the House or the Senate, that we need to find some way to have influence over those persons. Because if we're going to maximize our resources here from the state, then we have to have influence statewide.
Any observer would say that a politician who's the mayor of Philadelphia who also has an interest in becoming a state party leader and influence on the national scene would also certainly be helping himself politically if he has political ambitions outside the city. Does that apply to you?
Not at all. I really can't imagine any circumstances at all where I'd be interested in doing anything else than remaining a part of this Philadelphia community.
No national office for Wilson.
Oh, absolutely not. I really don't like to travel. I don't like to fly. I don't like trains. I hate riding in cars long distances. And I left the state PUC, I think, above everything else because of that travel back and forth every day and having to fly all around the state. I can't imagine having a state like Pennsylvania as an area that you have to cover it and things like that. So I just somehow like to be able to get in my car and travel from the airport out to the northeast and do so in 45 minutes and see all the city. So I kind of like Philadelphia for that reason.
We've been tape recording that remark.
That's fine. Please play it back year after year for the next 50 years, all right?
Let me just remind listeners that this is Wilson Good on Fresh Air. I'm T. O'Brien. And let's start opening up the phone lines. If you have a question for Wilson Good, the number to call is 923-2774. Let's go to our first caller and see what they have to say to you. Hello, you are on Fresh Air.
I am. Well, first of all, I think Wilson Good is wonderful. I'm so happy he got in. This is Marianne Currieri, Child's Advocate, and I'd love to know if the Civil Rights Act, he will place the Civil Rights Act of 1964 in all child care agencies so that everyone will know that they can adopt a child regardless of their race, color, age, sex, or religious opinion, because that's what the Civil Rights Act of 64 says. Every agency in the city, as well as the nation, receives federal funds.
Okay, let's put the question to Mr. Good.
Yes, I think it's very, very important that we move towards a program are removing young people who are now in institutions to homes with parents, and therefore a program of support for adoption will be a major part of my administration in terms of my welfare department. So, yes, I believe that if indeed the 1964 Civil Rights Act, as you've outlined it, proposed that, I want to make sure it happens.
Okay, let's go to another call and see what they have to ask you. Hello, you're on Fresh Air.
Hello, Wilson Good. I have a question for you regarding the Board of Education. I'm real pleased with your own election and Connie Clayton's appointment. Do you plan any changes at the Board of Education?
I don't plan to make any changes personally myself at the Board of Education. I have gone out and supported new leadership at the board level in terms of Herman Matterman and Ernestine Rouse to be added to the staff changes made there already. I believe that we can, with those persons, make the necessary changes in the school district. So I don't plan to go in there and propose that you do A, B, and C. I believe that those persons who are there in policy and staff should be able to make those kinds of decisions.
Okay, thank you very much. Hello, you are on Fresh Air.
First of all, I'd like to offer my congratulations. And
thank you very much.
It's a friendly group this afternoon.
Pardon me?
It's a friendly group. Mr. Good is in luck.
Well, he's in a friendly city. My question specifically relates to your platform on the arts. Now that you've won the election, what are you going to do to implement that platform, and who's going to have the responsibility within your organization for the implementation?
I plan to appoint within the next week a staff person who will be responsible for carrying out the platform. I plan also to appoint an advisor group on arts and culture that will also oversee the implementation of that platform. And so you will see by the 20th of this month that whole plan unfold before your eyes.
Any major changes?
The fact that I will appoint a staff person who will have full responsibility for implementing the 13-point program, which I outlined in my campaign, will be indeed a major change.
Okay.
How high up in the ladder will that person be within your administration? I mean, will that person really have full powers for implementation, or will it be basically someone that's a person that deals strictly with the public?
That person will be someone who will be a policy-level person who will work directly with the mayor and the mayor's office.
Okay, thank you very much for that call. Hello, you are on Fresh Air.
First of all, I would like to say hi to Mr. Good. This is Marlene from Germantown. And I'd like to know, when will you have the town meetings in Germantown?
The town meeting in Germantown will be either on Monday night or Tuesday night. And I really don't know which night it will be. But if you would call 568-1984, they can tell you when it is.
And also, I've been having a hard
1934.
time.
568-1934.
Okay, and I'd just like to say this. I've been having a hard time to get an appointment or anything with you. Every time I call your office, I get the runaround. So I would like for you to, you know, try to make some arrangements for me to get an appointment with you, please.
Well, that's very difficult at the present time because I'm really making appointments only with those persons who I want to appoint to offices of the cabinet and to commissioner and deputy job. But as soon as I'm done this process, I will start then to be open up to the public to meet with those persons.
Okay, thank you very much for that call. This is Wilson Good on Fresh Air, and I'm Tia O'Brien. If you have a call for Mr. Good, a question, the number to call is 923-2774. Our phone lines are open now, and let's take another call. Hello, you are on Fresh Air.
Hello. I'm a supporter of Mr. Good, whose support is already being somewhat eroded by some of his recent actions, and I'd like to ask the reasons for them. First, why it was necessary to announce his support for leadership of the school board. I felt that with the Rizzo people mostly gone, that it was time to depoliticize the school board. Second, you want to let me go ahead?
Sure.
Second, the announcement of a finance department head before getting the recommendations from the commission that you're supposed to go by. And third, on the announcement of your new police commissioner, the statement that one of the reasons was the low police morale because of the deadly force rules. I hope you're not going back to the Rizzo rules if anything goes.
You want to answer this?
Repeat your first point again, please.
The your announcement of your support for leadership on the school board.
And the next one was the...
The finance department announcement before the commission gave you their candidates.
Yes, and the other one was...
The third was the deadly force rule when they announced the police new police commissioner.
Deadly force rule. Okay. You want to wait while I respond to each one of them?
Yes, please.
I was asked to by at least 7 members of the school board to express my preference. They felt that without my expressing their preference, that there would be divisiveness on the school board and that there would be perhaps a lot of infighting. But they felt if I came out and showed strong leadership for my preference for one of the 3 or 4 people who were all deemed qualified, that indeed would be a way to keep this from happening. And I did that because I was asked to do it by at least 2/3 of the school board members. Secondly, I asked the finance panel about a month, about a week after the election, to indeed to respond to a list of names which they had. For some reason, they could not do so. I was really under a great deal of pressure to move ahead with my cabinet and get the work behind me. And since I was aware of all the names that had been given to the panel and all that they had, and since I was aware that the name that I thought that would likely come out from that panel would be Dick Gilmore, I felt it in the public interest to basically to announce who my preference would be at that time. The panel, by the way, is not a panel which it says they will have to pick the people. The panel purpose is to qualify, is to indicate that the people who are going to be appointed are qualified for that position. And therefore, I think that my question to the panel simply was, is Dick Gilmore qualified to hold this job?
Can I just interject for a second?
Yeah.
Why couldn't the panel respond right away? And let's just clarify that under the city charter, the finance director is a little different from your other appointees. This panel has to be convened, and they must initiate they must give you back a recommendation on that.
My understanding is that the panel, one of the people was out of town for 2.5 weeks.
So it wasn't that they were unwilling.
Not at all. Not at all. It was just a matter of priority, as I saw it, in terms of how they, in fact, were dealing with this whole thing. But I think that it is perfectly consistent to submit a name to a panel, to release to the public whose name you submitted, and then have the panel come back and say whether that person is qualified or not.
Were they not to meet this week? Have they done so?
They've met already, and then they came back and said of all the people that they reviewed, that Gilmore was by far the most outstanding person on the list.
And when did they do that?
I got the list on Monday.
On Monday. We didn't publicly, I don't believe I remember seeing it.
There should be something out now in the form of a press release that indicates that Dick Gilmore was indeed found to be the most qualified person for the job.
Before you answer the third question about the decision not to reappoint Mort Solomon as police commissioner, I'd like to just throw in my little question on that as well. During your news conference yesterday where you announced that you are appointing George Sambor as...
Gregorik Sambor.
I'm sorry, as the new police commissioner, you said that that you had been influenced by...
something out now in the form of a press release that indicates that Dick Gilmore was indeed found to be the most qualified person for the job.
Before you answer the third question about the decision not to reappoint Mort Solomon as police commissioner, I'd like to just throw in my little question on that as well. During your news conference yesterday where you announced that you are appointing George Sambor as...
Gregorik Sambor.
I'm sorry, as the new police commissioner, you said that... that you had been influenced by a couple of things that had been fairly controversial, like the arrest of Frank Rizzo's son-in-law an hour before you were to debate him back in the spring, and also the recent controversy and fines leveled against the police department after it was found that they had taken off catalytic converters from the police cars. Perhaps you could elaborate a little bit on whether or not those factors were really major factors, or what were your concerns in not keeping Solomon on?
I think that if you want to start from point A, that my desire is to go out and to look at who can best lead each and every department over the next 4 years. And what you do is that you think through everything about the personality, about the qualification of the person, the background of the person, all of those things. And all of those factors come into play when you go and make a decision. I reached a decision after a lot of personal struggle with it that it was best in that department at this time to make a change. And there's no one single thing that you can point to and say, why did you make that decision? Personally, I'm very, very fond of Mort Solomon. He and I relate very, very well. Of all the commissioners, I think that he and I perhaps related as well as any of those persons who were my commissioners over the past 3 years. But at some point, you have to ask yourself, can this person lead this department the way you want it to be led over the next 4 years? And my conclusion was, no, he cannot. And
why?
I think it's style, it's personality. It's the perception on the part of people about the kind of person that he is. It's all the things that happened before, whatever those things are, that go into the makeup of a decision of that kind. And you and also a desire to perhaps even to make a clean cut with the past. And say we need some freshness and newness to move into the future.
This is Fresh Air. I'm T. O'Brien, WHYY City Hall reporter. And our guest this afternoon is W. Wilson Good, Philadelphia's mayor-elect. Our phone lines are open. The number to call is 923-2774. I have one other little question about Mort Solomon, and then we will get to our next caller. You mentioned style, personality. Could you be specific?
I think that the people who know Mort Solomon know that he's a very direct person, that he's a no-nonsense person, that he's often abrasive, that he's often non-approachable, that from time to time he is combative with others. And I think all of those things make up a good style, and at some time you need a person with those basic characteristics. Other times you don't need a person with those characteristics.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. This is Fresh Air, and you are on the air.
Congratulations, Mr. Good.
Thank you.
My question is, who are you going to endorse in the upcoming presidential election? And another part is, if you are going to support Reverend Jesse Jackson, why haven't you openly supported him as of yet?
Well, I basically want to indicate that I've said all along that I will not endorse anyone until sometime after the first of the year, and that I will endorse the person that I feel will most likely be the winner of the Democratic sweep state, because I want to support the winner. And let me also indicate that I will support the person that I feel will win because I want to be able to leverage my support for resources from Washington to my city. That I ran for mayor of Philadelphia because people expect me to solve problems. And if indeed I'm going to be able to solve those basic problems, then I have to be able to have a direct relationship with the person who will occupy the White House in Washington.
I'd like to just pick up on that. The day after you were nominated in the Democratic primary in Philadelphia, you told reporters when asked about Jesse Jackson, and I'm quoting now, "I don't feel that we can beat Ronald Reagan in 1984 if we split the Democratic vote among blacks and whites. We need all of the people in the party to pull behind one candidate in order to be successful in the fall as I see it." Do you think that Jesse Jackson can do that?
No, I do not. I feel, number one, that at the time I made that statement, it was some talk that Reverend Jackson would run at that time as an independent candidate for the presidency and therefore would split the Democratic Party vote in the fall. Since that time, he is not running as an independent, but is running at this time as a Democrat. and is therefore involved in the Democratic sweepstakes, the various primary elections around the country. And I think that's the right of anyone who wants to go out there and try and receive the nomination. That's far different than what the situation was back in June of 1983, in my view. And therefore, where I am now is that after we've had two or three early primaries and some of the Democratic caucuses around the country, I want to look and see who at that time will likely be in a strong position to win. I want to see some polls. I want to see where things are headed. And I want to be able to then come out and say that for Philadelphia in 1984, this person is a person I ought to support for that top office.
Okay, thanks very much for that call. Hello, you are on Fresh Air.
Thank you very much, Ms. O'Brien and Mr. Good, for this opportunity. By virtue of your election, it seems as though the citizens of Philadelphia have made a statement that they want change. I heard you mention change several times in your comments. So any congratulations on your election is also, I would expect, a congratulations to the citizens of Philadelphia for this change. When I was a child, right up through my teens and early 20s, whenever a political figure addressed the public, whether on television or radio, whether it was Truman or Eisenhower or Kennedy, right through that whole era, they always, at least once, reminded us that this nation and its form of government was founded upon spiritual principles. I don't have a question, I have a request. Would you, Mr. Good, please reflect on your spiritual position? Thank you very much.
Yes, I think that most people who know me and know me well know that I believe very strongly that my philosophy, my approach to life is deeply rooted in my religion, in my faith and my belief. That God guides and direct the lives of those persons who trust and believes in Him, and therefore I am a real true believer in that, and feel that throughout my life the decisions that I make will be based upon principles that I've learned through my long years of being in church are right and wrong, and you have to always basically remember that there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it, and I don't believe there's an in-between way, and therefore you ought to do what is right at all times.
All right, thanks for that call. You are on Fresh Air. Hello?
I was very pleased that you chose the Raymond Rosen Housing Project as the site for your announcement of your appointment of the head of PHDC. My question concerns the Philadelphia Housing Authority. First of all, I was hoping that the spirit of your administration will be quite different than the Greens administration, because I was present in a meeting where Green said that the tenant representation on the board of PHA would be like putting a child on the board of the school board. And that was very disturbing to those of us active in the tenants' rights movement. And I was wondering whether you intend to retain Thomas Kelly as the head of PHA, and what plans you are undertaking to change the conditions and of PHA housing and the way PHA has been virtually run with no participation by the tenants who reside in those units.
Thank you very much. Mr. Good?
I think that there should be involvement by tenants on two levels. Number one, there should be on the board of PHA, in my view, a tenant, at least one. Number two, I believe there should be involved in each development with the management of that development a tenant advisory group that will work with that manager to help to maintain the property, to help to collect rent, to help with social programs and recreational programs. So I believe there should be involvement of tenants on two levels. Secondly, I intend, as I've said so many times, to make, to the extent I can, major changes in the management and policy levels of PHA. I will not hear today, nor will I in public until I have the person beside me talk about personalities. I don't think that you can necessarily change PHA by removing one person from it. There are system problems there that must be corrected. There are deep-rooted management problems that must be dealt with, in my view. And yes, I intend to deal with all of those problems, but I don't intend, as I've not done before, to deal with a personality via this microphone here this afternoon.
Tom Kelly became really a lightning rod for housing activists' complaints around the city during the time that Frank Rizzo was mayor and then when Bill Green was mayor. Can he really function effectively in that position if you kept him on?
I think that, Tia, that's a question I prefer to save until later. And I think that, again, I would prefer not to make any comments about Tom Kelly except when I'm prepared to make my announcement about public housing in the city.
We have only a couple of minutes left, and I did want to ask you, before we finish up here, to give your own assessment as a former cabinet member in Bill Green's administration. As he leaves office, how would you size up his performance? He described himself in a recent speech in San Francisco as a very self-righteous mayor who often reaps some criticism for that. He's been accused of failing to really do what you're trying to do now, and that is to maintain a coalition and work compromises. How would you size up his performance?
I think that I've said on a number of occasions that history will judge Bill Green, in my view, in a much brighter light than those who are currently assessing his achievement in office, I think that when you look at Bill Green, perhaps if he suffers from any major fault at all, it was the unwillingness, in my view, to daily and weekly and monthly and yearly convey to the public his accomplishments, his achievements, things that he, in fact, did. He did go through 4 years in office without any corruption in his government, without any a real honest government based upon integrity. If you look around the city on department-by-department basis, certainly the costs of running this government based upon absolute dollar terms is less per capita than it was 4 years ago. So I think Bill Green essentially is a person who I think will be judged in history in a far better and different and more positive light than he is judged now at the present time.
All right. Thank you very much for being with us on Fresh Air. Wilson Good, Mayor-elect of Philadelphia. I'm T. O'Brien. Thank you for all your phone calls this afternoon. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Let's welcome back Terry Gross, who has lent us the studio for the hour. Thank you.
Thank you, Tia, and thank you, Mayor-elect Wilson Good.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to be here.
I want to thank as well our listeners for their questions. I want to remind you that in the near future, most likely sometime next week, Tia O'Brien will be back on Fresh Air to host an interview with outgoing Mayor Bill Green, and our phones will be open again for that interview. And Tia is, of course, 91FM City Hall and political correspondent, and you can hear her reports evenings on 91 Report, which we broadcast every weekday evening at 6:29, right after All Things Considered. It's 3 minutes to 5 o'clock, and this is WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. National Public Radio's All Things Considered is coming up at 5, and I'll tell you what's happening tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air after this report from Shadow Traffic.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. If you're heading home westbound on the Schuylkill Expressway, some slowing from Vera through Spring Garden, an earlier accident cleared off to the side. Again, some slowing from the Twin Bridges down to the City Line off-ramp. Now, that's due in part to some defective traffic lights on City Line Avenue at Belmont Avenue. They're out of sync. Lower Murray and police are en route to direct traffic there. Also, southbound City Avenue is slow from the north end of the City Avenue bridges all the way out through Belmont Avenue. If you're heading out on I-95 northbound leaving Center City, slowing for a half mile approaching the Ray Street merger. Again, some slowing for a mile getting off at the Woodhaven off-ramp. If you're traveling in Mount Laurel, Burlington County, northbound on 295, just approaching Route 38, an accident involving an overturned car, police are asking you to avoid that area this afternoon. That's Shadow Traffic. For WHYY 91 FM, this is Jim Battalese.
That Shadow Traffic Report was funded with a grant from Blaupunkt Car Radio. Tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air at 3 o'clock, we'll be joined live by Libertarian Party presidential candidate David Berglund. And at 4 o'clock, my guests will be Ossie Davis and Ruby Dee, both actors. They are married, and they are also civil rights activists. So that's at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. This Sunday at 2 o'clock on The Best of Fresh Air, we'll feature an interview with Gloria Steinem, a founding editor of Ms. Magazine, and Barbara Ehrenreich, author of a new book called The Hearts of Men, about men's rebellion against the traditional roles of husband, father, and provider. So that's this Sunday at 2 o'clock on The Best of Fresh Air. I hope you can be listening. That's it for today's edition of the program. Contributing was Tia O'Brien. Joyce Lieberman was the technical director. The associate producer of the show is Maeve McGoran. Danny Miller's the co-producer. And my name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a very good evening. This is WHYY FM in Philadelphia, where listeners supported public radio in the Delaware Valley. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.
Good evening from National Public Radio in Washington. This is Noah Adams.
And I'm Susan Stamberg with All Things Considered.
There come some pacifists, you know, they are 18, they are 20, they look like freaks, you know. Long hair, sometimes very dirty. Okay, nothing is perfect.
The village of Camiso in southeastern Sicily. NATO cruise missiles are soon to be installed nearby. The villagers are worried about the missiles, the peace activists, and the mafia. The story tonight on All Things Considered.
Also, Italy may be pulling half of its peacekeeping force out of Beirut.
A resumption of arms sales to Argentina.
Korean Airlines Flight 7, a report on why the plane strayed over Soviet territory.
And playwright Marsha Norman on the movie Terms of Endearment.
First news.
This is Brian Naylor. In California's Mojave Desert, a dry lake bed awaits the return of the space shuttle Columbia. After 10 days in space, millions of miles of travel, and an orgy of scientific research, the spaceship is expected to touch down at Edwards Air Force Base in a little less than 2 hours. The landing had been planned for earlier today, but as Steve Futterman reports, problems with the shuttle's computers forced the delay.
Everything appeared to be going just fine. It seemed like it would be just another routine landing for Columbia. Then, just after the astronauts fired their thruster rockets, trouble occurred. Two of the spacecraft's 5 computers malfunctioned. The astronauts were never in any immediate danger, since any one of the computers can bring Columbia down safely. But space officials wanted to know why the malfunctions took place, so mission...